living alone is the best possible arrangement. Until you realize that there's no good explanation for footsteps at night. I was hovering in the gray spaces between asleep and awake when I finally understood what I was hearing. I opened one eye to look at the digital clock. It was 12:19. Just 13 minutes after I'd gone to sleep, and the rhythmic sounds had tapped their way into my dream sequence. It was a friendly man knocking at my door. I could hear a thumping. And then it was the footsteps on my wooden floor. I opened the other eye and sat up. It's always difficult to untangle the sticky haze between early dreams and an empty house. I definitely heard something, right? I heard it again. I imagined that the source was holding its breath because I certainly was. I tried to make sense of my surroundings. The red glow of the digital clock was the only light. I could hardly see any of my own bedroom. It had sounded like footsteps coming from the wooden hallway floor. I still didn't dare to breathe. I was renting the entire second floor of a house, so there was no neighbor that could have been walking through the halls. Anyone treading on the wooden floor had to be in my own home, with me. Everything was now silent. And I let out a sigh. And then I heard it again. Fuck. What is that? My pulse shot up high enough to cause physical pain. My mom told me that a single woman living alone in this town was a risk. I had actually convinced myself that I was safe, and right then I blamed my mom for letting me do this. What was I supposed to do? Call the police? Only for them to not find anything? Just go back to sleep like nothing was wrong? Hell no. There was only one thing for it. I crawled out of bed, grabbed my Louisville Slugger with one hand, and plucked little Doodles off my nightstand with the other. Doodles was my stuffed dog, and he kept me safe. I took a deep breath and headed out my bedroom door. I couldn't take a flashlight with me because that would alert any potential intruders and or monsters that I was about to discover them. I didn't think that my baseball bat looked very intimidating when paired with my long-sleeved pink silk pajamas, so I needed to keep the element of surprise on my side. Putting one bare foot in front of the other, I stalked silently through my living room, across my kitchen, and along the short hallway, and poked my head into the bathroom. The bathroom is always the worst moment when checking for intruders, because Bloody Mary lives there. I looked in just far enough to see my own silhouette reflected in the dark mirror. I told myself that I would keep the lights off because I was staying clandestine, not because I was terrified that the image in the mirror would become a horrible, wrinkly, haunted version of myself if I flipped the light switch. I slipped out the bathroom and into my tiny office. It was empty, of course, and that only meant one thing. I had to check the office closet. Without breathing, I stepped closer, rested a shaking hand that was still clutching Doodles on the knob, and held the bat aloft. I opened the door aghast. Nothing. Relief washed over me. Wow, I didn't even realize how much I'd let myself slip toward the teetering edge of panic until it finally abated. Whatever I'd been hearing clearly wasn't a stalker. Who knows exactly what it could have been that echoed into my room? I paused. It couldn't have come from the living room or kitchen because those were on the other side of my bedroom wall. The sound had been much closer than the office, as though it were just across from my bedroom door. Where would that place it? I walked back through the hall, kitchen, and living room. Then I turned back into the office. I stared at the walls in confusion. Why the hell was my office so small, and why hadn't I asked that until now? Too much central space carved up a rectangular floor plan. Brow furrowed, I moved back into the tiny office closet. This space should have been much bigger. Maybe it had been smaller to clear way for the central heating duct? It got really cold here in Schenectady, New York, so the house might have been built around it. A tall vent stood in the back of the closet. I latched onto it and pulled it, and it made a clang. Well, shit, there goes the subtlety. The grate had come off much more easily than I had expected it to. I kept a flashlight in the office closet, so I switched out Doodles to grab the black mag light my dad had given me when I moved out. I flicked it on and pointed it out into the drafty opening. Holy shit. There was more space in there than in my entire office. How the hell had I not noticed this? I didn't want to go in. Then I imagined spending the entire night trying to fall asleep knowing I hadn't checked inside. I crouched down, took a deep breath, and crawled in. Within one step, it had opened up enough for me to stand. I waved the flashlight around frantically, pointing the bat like a rifle, checking every corner. It was empty. My heart thrummed loud enough to alert the neighbors as I took in every detail of the room. It was unfinished and not insulated, revealing only the reverse of the drywall and bare studs as decor. A thin coating of dust covered the plywood floor, and it stunk. Something was in the corner. I pointed a trembling flashlight toward it and stepped forward. It slowly came into perfect clarity, my throat tickled with a gentle caress of pending vomit as tears crowded around my eyes. Discarded, rotting pizza crusts. Empty bottles of water. A ragged sleeping bag that clearly belonged in the trash. One greasy sock, a moldy toothbrush, and a pile of very crusty tissues. Someone had been living in my home. I shook. There was more. I slowly knelt down to pick up a stack of something that had been left by the tissues. They felt disgusting, slimy, and heavy in my hands as I lifted them up and understood what they were. They were photos of me, in my apartment, me cooking dinner, me watching TV, me wet and naked as I emerged from the shower, me on the toilet. I started sobbing. One photo was taken from above my head while I slept. The photographer was no more than 3 feet from my face. The world then felt tilty, like I was on an unstable boat. I dropped the photos, turned, and headed back for the office closet. In a daze, I moved the grate back into place, crossed the closet door, and shut the office behind me. I'm in shock. Who was in my home? How did he escape if his footsteps were audible just moments before? And why did I let myself forget the bat in that horrible, hidden room? Last week, I discovered that a man had been living in my house. I called the cops, of course. They showed up and checked out the hidden room. After a thorough examination, they arrived at a firm conclusion. A man had been living in my house. So what do I do now? I asked the portly cop, who was busy filling out a report. He mumbled, finishing his work and pocketing the notes. You, might want to stay in a hotel or something. He didn't make eye contact as he said this, and a pause ensued. Okay, so when is it safe for me to be back home then? The cop scratched the back of his head. When this guy is gone, I guess. I gawked at him. Well, how will I know that happened? I wanted an answer, any answer. And he huffed. Look, I don't know. Come back when you feel it's safe to come back. He put his hands on his ample hips. You're saying that you have no idea who this guy is? I narrowed my eyes. No, and I think I answered that question already, every single time you asked it. He glared at me from the corner of his eye. Well, what do you want us to do? Arrest someone who isn't here? They left shortly after. I couldn't really afford an indefinite stay at a hotel. Being new to town, I didn't have any friends, and I wasn't likely to make any by calling casual work acquaintances in the middle of the night to request a slumber party. I could move, but that would take weeks of preparation, and my plans would be very obvious to a stalker inside my house. So I went back to bed, and I didn't sleep that night. For the next week, I kept my Louisville Slugger on one side of my bed and Little Doodles on the other. Doodles is my stuffed dog. I considered buying a gun. I quickly realized, however, that people are very misinformed about firearms. I wasn't going to turn into She-Rambo by purchasing a pistol from Walmart, and I truly didn't think I had it in me to end another person's life. So I waited for the cops, who promised to keep an eye out and call me if anything came up. They never called. Do you want to know how to dream about stalkers all night? Have one show up in a secret room in your house. That shit will haunt every sleeping and waking moment. I finally cracked. My mom said this city was too dangerous for a single woman to live alone. I hadn't told her about the secret room. She'd certainly freak out, but ultimately wouldn't have had any more solutions than the cops did. Well, she might tell me to come home and live in my childhood bedroom for the rest of my life, but that wasn't an option for me. Regardless, it was time to accept defeat and tell her that she'd been right. "Hi, Mom. Can I talk to Dad?" I said as soon as she picked up the phone. "What's up, Olivia?" my dad asked as he whisked onto the line. I squeezed little Doodles. "Hey, Dad. I had kind of a weird question. So, how you found this apartment? You said it was a friend of yours who gave you the info?" Several seconds of clicking interrupted his response. "Does that make sense?" he asked after the line cleared. No. I actually didn't get any of that. It's just that this place is..." And the clicking cut me off. "Dad, there's something wrong with the connection." "Sorry, honey," he answered as the sound finished. "I don't think you can hear me." I clenched my jaw. Things were stressful enough without struggling to make myself understood. I hate when that happens. "So, something came up I need to talk to you about. Can you hear me okay?" More silence, then interspersed clicking. "Dad, should I text you instead?" "No," his voice came through. "No, just listen." My stomach felt like cold clay. "I'm listening, Dad." More clicks. "Dad, I'm having a hard time hearing you. I can call you back later." His voice was coming through in bursts. One brief moment of clarity shined through. "Love you, Olivia. Talk to you soon." And I hung up the phone. Then I laid back on the bed, clutching Doodles tight. And then I finally admitted it to myself. I was alone. I was terrified. And I missed my parents. I closed my eyes and curled into the fetal position. I then opened one eye. The clicking had been regular enough for me to memorize it. Maybe a ham radio was interfering with the frequency. Did I know what a ham radio or frequency were? I had a thought that I wanted to dismiss, but couldn't. It rattled around in my head like a trapped bee, bumbling against the inside of my skull until I finally let it out. I opened the other eye. Sometimes we check things that we know are false just to cleanse them from our minds. Even the most ridiculous of notions get trapped by people willing to do the hard work of believing them. So I got up and headed to my computer, thinking of the clicks as I opened Google. I laughed at myself for shaking. Fortunately, this would all be put to rest in just a second. Short, long, short. Pause. Short, short, long. Pause. Long, short. And repeat. My internet was slow. What was it called? Morn sequence? No, that was stupid. Morse sequence, that was it. A quick search revealed Morse code. I looked up the different letters and grabbed a pencil. And to my surprise, the cycle actually translated. Surprise became unease, and unease turned to reaching for Little Doodles and the Louisville Slugger with the same shaking hand. The same three letters had been coming through, over and over, from my father's phone. Run. Have you ever felt time turn sideways? That's what happened when I realized my father had been telling me to run from my home. My grandmother's desk clock ticked softly. Little Doodles, my stuffed dog, gave me an unbroken gaze. Everything looked peaceful. But a hurricane was tearing its way through my head. Each second felt too fast. I was frozen in place and horrified that an all-out sprint would be insufficient. I stared at the clock. How could it have the audacity to be so calm? A door creaked behind me and I was flying. I grabbed my cell and pocketed it, plucked Doodles from the bed and grabbed the Louisville Slugger and threw on my slippers, assuming that I had no time to change out of my pajamas. I ran for the front door as the hinge continued to squeak, using the moonlight to dodge the furniture in my living room as I was sure. Was I? That a man moaned behind me. I fumbled with the knob, pulled, hit resistance, whimpered, closed it. Carefully slid open the chain lock with shaking fingers. fought an uncooperative deadbolt, opened the door successfully, and ran into the night. Then I got to the sidewalk and stopped. What the fuck do I do now? What happens next? I took stock of the situation. It was the middle of the night as I stood on an empty street and shivered. I had no car, no money, no friends in town, and I left my wallet inside. I must have looked quite the sight. The pink silk long-sleeve pajamas provided minimal intimidation or protection. My slippers, which were oversized fluffy comfort novelties shaped like stuffed sloths, weren't meant for outdoor use or adults in general. I held Doodles in one hand and the Louisville Slugger in the other. Some moments exist only to remind us that we don't have our shit together and that fate thinks it's just funny as hell. As I stood there with my stuffy slippers and baseball bat, wondering what to do next, I realized that I was in such a moment. My head spun. Should I call my dad back? No, he was clearly not free to talk. If I did anything to indicate that I'd heard this Morse code message, the person silencing him might... I didn't want to think about that. I told myself that my mom and dad were perfectly fine and that no one was hiding in the dark, waiting to kill them. I told myself the same message. The concept was too absurd. There was no way that someone could be hurting my parents to get to me, right? But why didn't my dad just tell me? He'd die for me if he had to. Faint electric chills ran along my back as I realized that he must have believed I was in immediate danger. He wouldn't hide the truth to protect himself. But he would do it for my sake. I was sure of it. I looked up at my home. The house glared back at me, its door open, inviting me back inside like I was just the right size for its sudden appetite. I hadn't left any lights on. The empty house felt so alone. Then one light flicked on the top floor. My chest froze in terror. The empty house had felt so alone. I pulled out my phone. My thumb shook too much to make the call. I hit 912-941. 1913, and several other failed attempts before finally calming myself enough to get through. 911, what's the nature of your emergency? There's a man in my house. You sent an officer to check it out a few days ago, and I think he's back. Okay, I'm relaying that information now. What's your name and address? I gave it to him and waited, staring at the streetlight. The night was cold, and I didn't move. I didn't want to be there, but I had nowhere to go. Olivia, you said that an officer came out to meet you last week? Yes, I answered, barely able to control my own voice. Yes, he said to reach out if the guy came back, and he's here. 2 seconds of silence dripped down my mind like a dolly clock. Are you in a safe location? I focused on my breathing now. Yes, I don't know. I might not be. The tears then began. Olivia, I need you to listen to me. Where are you now? The dispatcher said. I breathed out slowly. I'm standing outside my house. I'm afraid to go back in. Something's going on with my dad, I think. What day did you say an officer came by? What did he talk to you about? My neck burned in frustration. I don't know. It was last week sometime. I also answered a lot of questions they didn't... Look, I'm not really wanting to talk about this. I just want to know when the cops are going to get here. I'm sorry, Olivia, but this is really important, and we're dealing with everything the best that we can. An officer is on the way right now to meet you, but you need to listen to me very carefully, okay? I tried to calm myself by gripping the bat tighter. Okay. Okay. I'm okay. I can do that. Olivia, we didn't send an officer to meet you last week. My thoughts then ground to a halt as I tried to make sense of the senseless. What? No, he was here for a while. I've been checking the records through and through. No officer responded to your residence at any point in the last 6 months, and there's no indication that a call from this phone ever came into our database. The burn in my neck pushed through to my hair. No, that doesn't make any sense. Look, I promise you he was here. I hear what you're saying, which is why I've been checking this entire time. And I'm sure of it. There was no officer at your house last week. The heat moved into my eyes as tears poured freely. I don't understand. What are you saying? What I'm saying, Olivia, he explained with chilling calm, is that if a man did come into your home last week, I can promise you that he was not a real police officer. I was standing alone on a dark street in the middle of the night, wearing only my pink silk pajamas and stuffy sloth slippers, holding a Louisville Slugger in one hand and Doodles in the other, when my world turned upside down. Okay, so you're saying, I mumbled, the words violating my throat like sandpaper, that a man pretended to be a cop when he came into my house last week? The phone clicked momentarily before the 911 operator's voice muffled the sound. That's what I'm saying, Olivia. Exactly that. And that there's no police record of the man either, who's been living in the hidden room in my house. I've been sleeping there for like a week, assuming the cops were keeping an eye on me while he was... I dry heaved before catching my breath again. While he was adding to his pile of crusty tissues, I wobbled and nearly fell onto the grass. And he's probably watching me right now because I just saw a light turn on in my house while I'm standing outside. He cleared his throat. Do you live alone, Olivia? I nodded before realizing that he couldn't see me. My brain felt like it was spit roasting 3 feet above my hair. Yeah, I'm alone. Or I thought I was. Okay, he responded quickly. We have a car heading out to pick you up right now. Just stay where you are. Your house number is 1913, correct? The first tense of relief washed through me. I relaxed my grip on the bat, but it felt distant, like I was watching someone else's arm. Yeah, that's right. I'm here now. Please hurry. We are hurrying. Just don't go anywhere, okay? And now even he sounded slightly on edge. Would it be a good idea for me to move away from the house? I'm pretty sure he's inside. No, he interrupted. We need you to stay where we can find you. Oh, okay. I felt lightheaded now. Okay, I'll stay right here. Calmness slowly pulled my brain back down to earth, reeling it in like a gently tethered balloon. Strange as this was, we were going to straighten it out. I didn't know what was going on, but holy shit, thank every one of Zeus's nipples that it hadn't been too late. I'd been so sure that the cop was real. It chilled me to the liver when I considered just how convincing he'd been. The man last week had played it so calm, like he didn't actually even give a shit. How was I supposed to recognize a fake cop when I met him? My breath stopped. Not metaphorically. I actually ceased breathing from fear. Olivia, can you hear me? How was I supposed to know which was fake and which was real? The car is almost there, Olivia. All I knew is that one of the two had mostly ignored me, while the other was contacting me through a phone immediately after my dad had used that phone to tell me to run. And that message had been coded, because he clearly thought that someone was listening in. Headlights appeared at the end of my street, and the car raced towards me. Nobody else was around. I lowered a shaking hand, holding the phone by my side. The car screeched to a halt directly in front of me, and I breathed. It was a cop car. Well, that can't be faked, can it? It would be much easier to pull together an imposter's uniform than to steal a police cruiser. This person had to be the legit one. I relaxed a little. A tall, thin man hopped out of the driver's seat, and he too was dressed like a cop. I made a split decision. Who to trust? The lazy cop who did nothing to help me, or the one connected to a 911 service and driving an authentic car? Olivia, he asked, stepping out to approach me, leaving his keys behind with the engine running. Yes, I answered, relieved. His pocket echoed. Oh no. It echoed with my voice. I hadn't been talking to a 911 operator at all. This man had been speaking to me through his cell phone as he drove to find me. A phone that was now in his pocket. 911 operators don't have to be so concerned about locations that they can gather through cell pings. I need you to come with me, he explained authoritatively. I nodded and slid the phone into my pocket. Then I tossed Doodles right to him. The man reached out in surprise and caught the stuffed dog, which is the natural human reaction when something flies at your head. This momentarily exposed his torso. I jabbed the bat's handle forcefully into his gut. He doubled over and wheezed, and then bent down in front of me, clutching his stomach. It was the perfect angle for me to bring the Louisville Slugger down on his skull. It sounded like a hammer made of fingernails carving a frozen, dusty chalkboard. He collapsed, and I stepped over him. My hand was on the door's handle when I stopped cold. Turning around, I could see that he was still conscious, but writhing in pain on the ground. I quickly moved back to him, hoping the sloth slippers muffled my footsteps. Raising the bat high, I bent down and snatched Doodles from his chest. "Thanks," I whispered to the stuffed dog. Then I reached for the police car's open door, threw Doodles and the bat onto the seat next to mine, shut it behind me, and threw it in drive. Damn, cop cars are powerful. I spun an erratic 180 before punching the gas and heading down the street. I glanced at the rearview mirror just before turning the corner. The man lay, unmoving, beneath the streetlight. I let out a deep, shuddering sigh of relief. "Hello, Olivia," a voice came from the back seat. Shitting a brick is supposed to epitomize the height of fear, but that's entirely wrong. And that's exactly what it felt like to hear a voice from the back seat of a stolen police cruiser after I'd taken a bat to its former owner's head. "Hello, Olivia," the man crooned from behind me. "It wasn't very nice to beat Otis unconscious." I froze. "Ah, don't tense up, little girl. You might do something you regret. Why don't you slowly find a place to park so we can have a nice chat? My dad used to call me a Tasmanian devil when I was little because I could get so wound up that my thoughts and hyperactive energy would spin beyond my control. I felt that now as my brain swirled faster and faster until I could sense nothing but a cloud of dust. My body seemed to move of its own accord. Distantly, I knew that I was driving to the top of a nearby rise in the road. Perhaps I was seeking out a pleasant view for when the end came. "Olivia, pull over," the man ordered aggressively. I knew that I would obey in short time. He didn't appear to realize the same thing as he shuffled anxiously behind me. I turned a corner and ascended the soft hill. The car squeaked as I pulled to the side of the road. I kept my foot pressed firmly on the brake, leaving the engine running. When he spoke again, the calm confidence had ebbed. "Finally," he heaved. "Okay, the bat. It goes out the window. Now." How to play that gamble? It was my only weapon. But if he had a gun pointed at me, holding it would do no good. In the case he was bluffing, though, I'd be losing the only thing that kept me safe. "Look at this picture, Olivia." Every individual vertebrae squirmed at a slightly different angle. I didn't want to see his photo, but had no power to stop myself from turning around and checking it. The man held his cell phone against the metal mesh partition that separated the front seat from the back. His screen shined brightly enough to keep his face obscured. Everything else dimmed from my sight as I took in the image. I'd never seen my dad looking so afraid. "What?" My voice fizzled like air from a deflating balloon. "What are you going to do to him?" "Well, it's not up to me. Throw the bat outside right now, or you'll never outlive the guilt knowing we hurt him because of your disobedience." I opened the door a crack and chucked the Louisville Slugger out, sending Lil Doodles with it for good measure. "Stupid girl. You need to know something now, Olivia." The burning edge of a panic attack danced just in front of me, playfully hinting that it was ready to light the spark of a complete Tasmanian meltdown, but it stayed just beyond arm's reach. "I already know two things," I answered. My voice sounded like it was coming from underwater. "The first is that you're a fucking asshole." "Olivia," he stuttered, taken aback. "You, those are foolish words." "And the second," I pressed, "is that this appears to be a real cop car, which means the metal partition is solid and you can't unlock the doors from inside of the back seat." I yanked the stick into neutral as I rolled toward the ajar door, tumbling gently onto the asphalt. The car moved as soon as I released the brake. I looked up to see the back wheel barreling down on my shoulder. I rolled away just as the tire pinched the edge of my pink silk pajamas. And then I breathed again, scooping up Doodles and the Louisville Slugger. I stood and watched the police car accelerate down the ravine at the bottom of the hill I'd chosen. It was a high-quality police car, too. I couldn't even hear him scream. But no automobile can survive even one drop off a 91-foot cliff. 3 seconds later, the taillights disappeared into darkness. Movies would have us believe that every minor accident ends with a major explosion, but all I heard was the soft crumple of metal reverberating. Any doubt of the man's survival was answered with quickly growing flames that danced on the underside of the tree leaves high above. I didn't know what to feel, so I couldn't process it. I slipped Doodles into my pocket and squeezed him tight. My mind was, in all probability, breaking in that moment. The only thing I could process was the lone, unarguable truth. It was too much. I swayed. If I could balance, that would be enough. If I could balance and not vomit, it would be a challenge, but if that were possible, I could focus on saving my dad. I vomited, and then I finished, and I stood again. And nothing had changed. I still had to get home to my parents. No one was going to take me there. So I stepped forward. And that's when two men tackled me from behind. There was no contest this time as the bat flew from my hand and they slammed me to the pavement. I understood nothing but pain and dizziness as I landed on my shoulder and temple. They bound my hands and my feet before squeezing me so tight that I could hardly breathe. Now, panic decided to stroll into town, wrapping spindly fingers around my throat as each breath pushed me further from calm. Now the adrenaline took over while I couldn't move my limbs, and now I felt weak, as two significantly stronger men threw all their effort into squishing my 100-pound body while they hauled me to a car's open trunk. There was no resistance. I couldn't fight back against them any more than I could lift a house. The only thing left was to absorb pain as they tossed me into the trunk, and the hood closed over my head. I was fucking pissed. Yes, I was scared, confused, ashamed, violated, and unbelieving can all be added to the pile as well. But I was mostly pissed. Movies love to show heroes struggling to break free after being locked in a trunk. They might pick a lock or break through to the back seat. And let me be the first to tell you that that shit doesn't work. I bounced around in pitch darkness as we drove for a small eternity. I lost my phone in the struggle and couldn't call for help or even check the time. I knew the anger wouldn't improve anything, so I squeezed little Doodles, my tiny stuffed dog, who was in my pink silk pajama pocket. I relaxed slightly. I knew that I should let the anger go. But nope. I got pissed all over again when I thought of not being pissed at the crusty tissue crew that had been hiding in my apartment. They were sick bastards through and through. There's no reason on God's green earth that a cadre of strange men should be living in my walls and tapping my phone. They deserved what they got. I considered the man I'd sent off a cliff and the other I'd bashed with the now lost Louisville Slugger. The thoughts chilled and stilled me, but I didn't panic. I was still angry. We're going to open the trunk. If you resist, we'll shut you back inside and burn you alive, just like you did to Oscar. Capiche? I didn't know if I was waking up. I had no recollection of the car stopping. The cramped trunk ride had separated my body and mind from one another. I simply lacked the wherewithal to attempt any resistance, and I was cognizant enough to realize that attacking the men with nothing but stuffy sloth slippers was a fool's errand. Yeah, I mumbled. Movies also like to depict a hero delivering a brilliant zinger at just the right moment, which is also nonsense. I obeyed silently as two men opened the trunk and stood back, pistols aimed at my head. The first thing to strike me was that they seemed so ordinary. I would not have given these men a second glance if I passed them at Starbucks. I shivered, but couldn't say why. The second is that I recognized a familiar scent. I think everyone can feel that they're home before seeing it. I hyperventilated as they dragged me from the trunk. Are we at my parents' house? Did you take me to my parents' house? The pistol whip was very loud. I knew only aggressive pain as they dragged me inside by my hair, wanting just a moment to catch my breath and sob out the hurt, but they kept me moving, head down in blinding agony. I cried out as they threw me on the floor, where I could finally writhe in pain undisturbed. Warm, wet sickness coated my fingers as I clutched my scalp. Olivia! I'd never heard my father truly, honestly panicked. That type of fear has no comparison. Once our parents are genuinely petrified, no basis of order is left in the world. Dad, I whispered, crawling toward his voice. They hurt me, Dad. My prodding hand found his leg. I laid my head down on his jean-clad lap and held still, and he didn't react. Blearily, I propped myself up on shaking palms and opened my eyes. The sight before me was blurry but unambiguous. Dad's arms were handcuffed to the radiator behind his back. What did they do to you? I gasped, head splitting in pain, as I reached for his wrists. It's far enough, Olivia, one man said. I froze, and then slowly I turned around. You know what? I mumbled. You're a real asshole. There's no reason to bring her into this, my dad pleaded. His voice shook with controlled panic. I'm not going anywhere. You can let her go, and nothing's going to change. The man sighed. You're not going to help us get what we need. My dad cried. My dad actually cried. I had never heard him cry before. I don't know what you're talking about, he finished. The air hung thick. The acute pain in my skull slowly dimmed as the room became more focused. We were in the kitchen. The man blocked out our only exit. His companion hung back, looking nervous. The first man, a thin grayish wallflower, was the only one who had spoken. A red streak reached across the butt of his gun. He must have been the one who hit me. Why? What reason could these freaks possibly have for tormenting my family? We didn't have any money. My parents were boring people who drove a beige Volvo. I leaned toward my dad as the thin man retreated to whisper with the other kidnapper. Dad, what are they doing? There's a button at the back of the cupboard where we keep the pots and pans. It opens a trapdoor in the middle of the kitchen floor. It used to be a wine cellar, but now it's a panic room that resists heat and shock. My thoughts snapped into focus as I became consumed with the all-encompassing desire to know precisely what the fuck he was talking about. He then gave me a knowing look, and I was silent. Look, thin man said, approaching us once more. You know the stakes. It's over. Are you really going to do this? I wanted to scream, to run, to fillet this asshole and feed it to walruses while I cried for 1,153 minutes and squeezed doodles while my dad stroked my hair. Instead, I looked up at my father's eyes and tried to remember everything about him that made me happy. That was impossible, though. He was miserable and afraid, which blocked out all the other thoughts. Okay, the man raised his pistol now. Wait, I struggled for balance. And then I heard the bang. The sound hurt my ears. I turned around to see my dad's face twisted in pure agony as the blood poured from the middle of his stomach. The man who had shot my father in the stomach walked calmly out of the room. Movies love to depict heroic gunshot deaths, but this was a mess. I pressed my hand against his abdomen as dark blood and hot intestines squished between my fingers. My dad struggled to articulate words that were interrupted by blood vomit. I spoke with detached shock, knowing that I had to act fast. I thought of the last things I wanted to say to him. It's a lot of pressure for 5 seconds. I'm sorry for all the times I was terrible. And a little shit. You were my little shit, he gasped. Now listen carefully. He was coughing blood now. The men have gone upstairs to my office. You need to push the button on the back of the cupboard and hide in the shelter below the floor. His face was turning very gray now. There are 2 levers on the wall. The left one closes the hatch above you. He mumbled. And then he was silent. And the other, I whispered. It will quickly incinerate the house. You need to destroy everything in my office, and those bastards deserve to be cooked. I nodded because I had no idea what else to do. But we have to get you hot. But, Dad, we have to get you to a hospital. Olivia. Well, Dad, if we don't, you'll die. You're losing a lot of blood. Olivia, you can stop now, Slugger. My dad looked down on me as I stared at the dirt between my cleats. Why do I have to bat? I hate that everyone watches me. He scratched his still brown hair beneath the blue ball cap. Because you're 8 years old, and it's time to stop being afraid of things you're capable of doing. I kicked the dirt, afraid to look up at the eager crowd. A few dozen people can still feel like Yankee Stadium when you don't want to be watched. My dad sighed. Okay, Olivia, remember that stuffed dog you saw at Toys R Us, the one I said you couldn't have? My eyes grew twice as big as I finally looked up at him. You mean Little Doodles? Yeah, that one. You can have it if you step up to the plate. I wavered. But what if I strike out? He laughed, and I felt nervous. If you go out there and you strike out and head back into the dugout with a brave face on, you'll have come further than if you hit a double. He then handed me the bat. The next time will be easier, I promise. Now get up there, Slugger. My jaw hung open because I had no words to form, so I forced it. Dad, I'm not going to leave you here. He then squeezed my hand and my world spun. What about Mom? I eked out in a voice I could barely hear, and his lip trembled. They got to her first. It was quick, I promise. It's a profound survival instinct that keeps us from experiencing too great of a shock all at once. My essence seemed to float above me, leaving my head cold and empty, like a snow cone that has been drained of all its flavor. Footsteps echoed down the stairs. My dad raised his eyebrows before his head rolled to his shoulder. Instinct told me that I didn't have time to wait. I dove for the cupboard and threw an armful of pots and pans onto the floor with an ear-splitting clatter, moving through the cookware like I was swimming in my anger. And there it was. 2 feet in front of me sat a tiny button that I had not noticed in 18 years of childhood, now ready to unlock everything I didn't want to know. The best way to hide something is to tell people it's normal. I pushed it. A small hatch in the floor opened behind me with a hydraulic hiss. I sat down and dangled my legs over the edge, looking at the dark floor some 7 feet below. How was I supposed to get there? Get the girl, Oliver. She'll still prove useful to us, his voice shouted from the bottom of the stairs. I had jumped before thinking about even jumping. The slippers I wore were not meant for shock absorption, but I ignored the pain and sprang to my feet. Two levers protruded from the wall in front of me. Is that a hole in the floor? I heard a voice say. I pulled the left one. The hatch closed just as the triggerman's face appeared above me and soft lighting illuminated the hatch. I screamed as the top snapped shut. Dad, I didn't mean to make you die alone. I sobbed. I collapsed against the wall and heaved. Hyperventilation stuck its finger into my brain and swirled it around like gooey cheese melting in French onion soup. The right-hand lever sat before me. My breathing slowed. I felt weak. Then I thought of the two men pacing inaudibly above me. Perhaps they were trying to escape my house. They might have been getting ready to run at that exact moment, thinking of future Christmases with their families and idle nostalgia and the million other things that make us want to grow old. They didn't know I could take it all away from them. Even if they knew, who would suspect that I was capable of burning two men to death? I reached into my pocket and squeezed Doodles. Then I grabbed the lever and pulled it. At first, there was nothing. The sudden heat radiated from the ceiling so powerfully that I had to lie down on the dirt floor and shield my face. Above me, my childhood home burned to the ground. There are moments when you're in so deep, it feels easier to just swim down. The house must have burned quickly because the hatch opened of its own accord just after a few minutes. As I lay still on the ground, staring at the dark patch of sky above, I only had a single thought. Why? What's the purpose of getting up and facing the ruins of my life? Days, months, years of agonized rebuilding lay ahead of me. And no matter how hard I worked, I would never be the same again. My parents were dead. My childhood home was destroyed. I had no family. And several people were actively trying to kill me. The journey deeper into hell would begin with the struggle to extricate myself from this bomb shelter. So why try? What was the argument against lying in place forever, wasting away as the smoky air licked its tongue into the corners of the evening? Let fall upon its back the soot, curled once about the house, and let me fall asleep. Because you're 20 years old, Olivia, and it's time to stop being afraid of things you're capable of doing. Shut the fuck up, I screamed as I flew to my feet, tears finally streaming. I'm sorry to yell at your memory, Dad, but it's too much. I caught the edge of the floor on my first sleep, my slippers sliding against the wall as I strained my arms to do a single pull-up. I probably should have ditched the slippers, but I was committed to getting over the edge, and the adrenaline wouldn't let me stop as my muscles burned with white-hot rage, and I slowly, slowly poked my head over the top. Reached out farther and pushed my leg against the wall. Hooked one knee over the lip and rolled back into the wreckage of my life. I sobbed and choked in the ashes. Olivia, you'd be amazed what you can accomplish when you're really pissed off. Not now, Dad, I gasped through sobs. It hurts too much to remember you right now. But it wasn't my father's memory that forced me to stand, turn around, and look for his charred corpse in the rubble. No, it was all me. My dad knew me well enough to just push the first step. I was so disoriented that I didn't know where to begin. The cool night sky had replaced what was once my kitchen ceiling. But I stopped thinking and started feeling. I would find him. The conscious part of my mind begged me not to look because I didn't want to see the man who had raised me so desecrated. But the unconscious piece, the stronger one, knew I had to be with him one last time. And it didn't take long. I only needed about 19 seconds to heave 13 boards aside, distantly impressed at my own strength. And then he was right in front of me. The dwindling firelight illuminated a barbecued skull leaning against the remains of a wall. His blackened skin hung in clumps like overcooked chicken. Both eyes were gone, but a single patch of intact flesh on his jaw still had a few burnt whiskers. Through a gap of skin that used to be his cheek, I could see his gold fillings, shiny and clean. I knelt down and touched his skull. The remnants of his skin slipped beneath my fingers like a thick film, giving way to the buttery pudding beneath. My mind was cracking like tectonic plates, sliding from their assumed place to leave the landscape changed so fundamentally that there was no hope of repair. I let it happen. We're born whole, and permanent damage is just another phrase for growing old. I promise that I'll always be your little shit, Dad. I pulled out Doodles and tapped his face against the charred lips I was afraid to touch. We're kissing you goodbye now. Then I stood. The man who shot my father had been right next to the hatch when my house burned. I guess he hadn't made it very far. The first sirens rang across open wreckage as I waded through the ashes and dust. Smoke rose like little chimneys were buried beneath each disgusting pile of my shattered life. I found him. This man was also reduced to a blackened skeleton, but most of his graying hair was still attached to his scalp. I rested one slipper against his ribcage, grabbed the base of his skull, and pulled. I met resistance as the cords of his vertebrae stretched, long, thin strands like angel hair pasta that I assumed were nerves. I grunted, pulled harder, and his greasy, ashy skull popped into my hands. It was surprisingly light. I grabbed a fistful of his hair and let the skull dangle as I walked away from my house. I headed to the garage, which was still whole. Garages are where we keep the pieces of us we're afraid to label as garbage, long after that's what they've become. And there was one particular piece of trash that I needed. I found it and walked back outside. The fire was strong enough to see the remains of his face as I lifted the skull to eye level. My dad bought me this when I was 8, I explained to him as I held up the Louisville Slugger. I wanted to say something wittier, something that would have made my dad proud, but there was nothing. We were broken. So I wordlessly swung the skull by its hair, threw it up into the night sky, and lifted the bat. I was angry as I swung, but I let that direct my focus instead of distracting from it. I hit the bastard's head so hard that it exploded on impact, the soft crack of his face followed only by the tinkling of 2 dozen shattered teeth. I didn't cry at the double funeral, because tears are an expression of hope for healing. The parade of fellow mourners passed me like the world's saddest wedding line. I wish I had someone next to me. Half of the people were complete strangers. I realized how little we truly know of our parents' lives and how much gets erased if they die without telling us. There's something incredibly depressing about returning to a motel in your hometown, and the impact is even stronger when two strangers are waiting for you inside. I've had enough creeps spying through my walls, I announced immediately upon seeing a man and woman waiting by my bed. And I'm just walking in the door after burying my mom and dad, so I have precisely zero fucks to give. Either leave or kill me, because I have a habit of burning things to the ground when my back is up against the wall. See? The woman asked the man. You owe me $100. He looked annoyed. We were just at your parents' funeral, Olivia. We met you in the line, afterward. I didn't recognize them. To be fair, they looked so ordinary that they were completely forgettable. There was a time when fear would have driven such a situation. But I looked inside and simply felt nothing. Sorry, I answered coolly. This day has been a bit of a blur. Is that why you didn't recognize half the crowd? The man asked, crossing his hands in front of him. My nostrils flared. Who are you? We worked with your father, the woman answered, grabbing a manila folder from the bed. You worked for the transportation authority? We worked for his real employer, not the one he lied to you about. My head spun, but I didn't show it. I closed my eyes and tried to conjure a reason to dispute her claim, but I couldn't find any. Then I searched for an explanation for the past few weeks other than what she was saying. Well, who did my dad work for? She squeezed her folder. The line. I shook my head. I don't know what that is. And that's the point, the man interjected. Everyone in our organization lies to our families. It's the only way to keep them safe. Well, it didn't work this time, I deadpanned. The woman's frozen visage cracked just a little. No, it didn't, she answered. But it held for years, the man added. You never suspected anything as a child, did you? My jaw slowly fell. Well, how long did he work for you? Since before you were born. Olivia, I'm terribly sorry about everything, the woman pressed, softer this time. A few weeks ago, he was discovered, and they tried to get him through you. My stomach knotted and unknotted itself like fried calamari that was not quite dead. Is that why the man was in my house? Yes, he answered. They put a man in your home and told your father to cooperate. They tapped both of your phones, interrupted and diverted calls, and watched you for 24 hours a day, and told your father that you would be killed if he informed you of what was happening. Fear shot through me, but only for a moment. I snuffed it out with a tiny flame, weak at first, but picking up momentum as every timid corner of me was engulfed by cleansing, yet controlled rage. What does the line do? I whispered. They stared at each other for a long time. Whatever agreement they reached was silent, and then the woman turned to me, her lips white. We exist because someone has to keep Delora in line. I shook my head. It's something you can either know everything or nothing about, the man answered. She took a deep breath before speaking again. You're young, which is important, and so I'm sorry, but you have minimal family connections now, which is an asset. Yet you still have a close emotional connection to our organization, the man added. Most importantly, the woman continued, her lips growing ever thinner, you've proven yourself in the field, and you're very, very motivated. I folded my arms. I've proven myself in the field? The man's eyebrows pushed into his scalp. You killed four men that night, Olivia. One with a bat, and two different fires killed three men, she went on. We're very selective, the man said gently. A trial by fire is a rare circumstance that elicits great attention. I pressed my palms against my eyes until tiny, colorful fireworks were all I could see. What the fuck is it that you people do? I yelled, dropping my hands to my sides. She stepped forward and handed me a folder. You can find out the answers if you want to. I opened the folder and looked over the first page. Every prospect has a code name, he explained. I ran my fingers across the word. Who chose Slugger? I asked quietly. The man squeezed his wrist. Once you start getting the answers, Olivia, there's no going back. Ever. I snapped the folder shut. Are you fucking kidding me? I shot back, grabbing Doodles from my purse. I looked at each of them in turn until both were able to meet my gaze. There's already no going back. I squeezed Doodles for comfort. Now tell me, how do we get started?